Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop on WAMC, our live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We'll be discussing wildlife and such today on the program with an old friend. Ward Stone is here to help answer your questions about everything from white nose syndrome and bats to invasive plant species, the animals you might see in and around the region. The former wildlife pathologist for the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, Ward Stone is an expert on the flora and fauna you see in your backyard and throughout the region. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also comment on the Vox Pop page of our website at wamc.org/voxpop. Check in on Facebook at WAMC Radio, facebook.com/WAMC Radio, obviously. Tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop or email voxpop@wamc.org. Ward Stone, so nice to have you back once again. It's been a rough road for the last couple of years.
It's a pleasure. I mean, the last time I saw you, I think you were helping me when I heard the stroke from the parking lot into the station.
Yes, indeed. And the last couple of years, you've been working awfully hard to get where you are today. And it's nice to have you back in front of a microphone.
It's really nice. You don't know how nice it is to be here. After I saw you and you helped me so much, and I went to the hospitals, I couldn't even sit up on the edge of the bed without falling over.
Yikes. Well, so, you look good. I got to say, you look good.
Well, my family, my friends, they came through and they supported me while I was down. But I couldn't talk. I couldn't swallow tubes. It was strokes do bad things to you. And I never thought that it was going to happen to me. But you saw right after it happened and was on the way. It only got worse.
Well, I mean, that was 2 years ago already?
Yeah.
It's been a long 2 years for you, and here you are. And it's nice to have you here, and I'm going to ask you a question right now that has been perplexing my wife and me. By the way, the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. So in our neighborhood, we see deer from time to time. It's a suburban neighborhood, and the deer, it's not uncommon. There is the mangiest deer that has been walking through our yard. We've seen it a couple of times now, and it doesn't look well the last month or so.
You know, there are probably thousands of white-tailed deer in the state of New York at the moment that don't look well, and it's part of a normal process in most cases. There are some mange cases. There's dermatophilosis. There's various kinds of infections, but they're not so common as what's going on, which is transition from the winter coat to the summer coat.
And that's what it looked like. The fur was patchy and
they can have huge patches that are look right down to the bare skin. Yeah. And then clumps of long hair adjacent to it.
It gets better?
So the long hair all goes and a fine red hair, reddish brown hair grows out and takes over, and they look great in the summer.
Well, that's amazing.
And that's what's going on most likely with your deer.
Okay. Well, you know, let's go to the phones because so many people are online here already at 1-800-348-2551. Started off with John in Liberty. John, you're on with Ward Stone.
Well, thank you. First of all, I want to say what a pleasure it is to have you back on the airwaves. I hope it's a regular occurrence. I miss your show so much, Dr. Stone.
Thank you,
John. I have
a
question about a raccoon that's in the vicinity of my house late at night, and I'm wondering if it might pose a danger to my dog, which is a rather timid, large Pomeranian, you could say, about the same size as the raccoon. Is it dangerous for those two to be in the same vicinity?
The raccoons don't do much attacking of even small dogs. The coyotes do, but not the raccoons. You want to make sure that your dog has got shots, the immunization for rabies, and the other immunizations, but especially for rabies, because if there is a threat with that particular raccoon, it's rabies, because periodically rabies goes through the raccoons, and you could have a rabid raccoon there. But I think that this is a time when a raccoon's going to be very busy. They're going to have young, and if this is a female, she's going to be awfully busy getting enough food to produce the milk that those babies are going to need. So she'll be out roaming around. She may even come out, if it's a female, during the day looking for food and water.
Would you discourage someone in my situation from putting out food? Because I thought I was feeding a feral cat, and then I realized that the raccoon was eating it. Is that a bad habit to get into?
Definitely stop feeding it, because that's going to add to the risk if it comes down with rabies, which is the most unlikely thing to happen with that particular animal.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and best wishes to you, sir.
John,
thank you, John.
We appreciate the call. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Ward Stone is our guest. Raccoons can be nasty. I remember 40 years ago or thereabouts, one was in our garage, and my father said, well, we got to get this thing out of here. It was a summer evening where he or she was walking around in our garage. He went, tried to prod the thing with a broom handle, just give it a nudge, bit the broom handle right through, like it was a saltine. And that's when we left. That's when we called, the wildlife people to get rid of the animal, because they're nasty.
Well, you were in its home.
No, he was in our home. It was in our garage.
But he considered it his or her home.
Yeah. All right, fair
enough. So it was both your homes.
All right. Let's go to Dee in Glenmont. Dee, you're on with Ward Stone.
I didn't answer.
Hi. I just wanted to say welcome back, Ward. Really missed you. So grateful for all the knowledge you have. While I was waiting, I had a question. I spent a lot of time over at Five Rivers, and last year I observed some geese, and they had some babies that were not, they were very young. And all of a sudden, they were there, and then they disappeared. And there were six of them. And then about 2 months later, there were six of them again. And I had to wonder, were they the same six that I initially saw?
Hmm. Well, you know that Five Rivers is a pretty big place.
Yeah.
And what will happen is the parents will move off with those goslings to another pond, another area, where there's fresh green grass. So I've seen the same kind of thing happen.
Okay.
And you can expect that. I mean, we could say that that's a goose and that one got picked off by coyotes or something. And another goose moved into the area with six young. But it's a good chance that was the same parents and the same six young. They're awfully good at guarding. That's one of the wonderful things I think about Five Rivers this time of year.
Yeah.
Is seeing the nesting Canada geese, seeing the young, and watching them grow and see just how good those parents are at watching over those young. Both the male and the female do it, and I think it poses a good lesson about nature for our children when they're going around the pond.
Yeah.
Usually when you go around the Beaver Tree Trail on the upper side near the road, there's usually a nesting pair right there.
Yep.
But
there are several this year.
Yeah. Well, there's very little grass down there. And you notice that pond is being taken over by water chestnuts.
Yes.
It's very poor for food for geese. So they're going to move to the uplands.
Okay.
And they're going to be where the grass is, where they're mowing some of the grass.
Yes.
And where they can get grass for those young. Because those young, they need nice, fresh, growing grass with high protein in it, and they eat a tremendous amount because they are eating grass. In order to meet their nutritional needs, they have to eat a lot of it. So the parents move those young from pond to pond and place to place.
Now, just a follow-up, I also do a lot of photography over there, so I sat very still, and the parents allowed these little ones to come very, very close to me. I'm talking within 2 and 3 feet.
Well, they must have sensed, and other people like you that frequent the area.
Yeah.
They must sense no particular threat that you're posing for those young, because Canada geese are capable of actually attacking people when they feel otherwise, and when their young are really under siege. So that's you can feel that you were especially blessed there.
Oh, that's nice.
The parents. Yep.
Yes, I was.
It sounds really good.
So welcome back and best of health to you.
Thank you very much. I'd like to see those pictures.
Oh, that would be nice.
That's really nice.
What kind of predators are at Five Rivers? You mentioned coyotes. And are there coyotes in general out that way?
Well, about 2 years ago, I was lucky enough to see a bobcat there.
You're kidding.
And, you know, whether a bobcat is there every day is doubtful, but I did see it. Coyotes are there, and very often they're not seen, but they are around.
Lurking.
In that area, yep.
All right, Ward, let's take a break. Ward Stone is our guest. We're having great fun here on Vox Pop. 1-800-348-2551. We'll get to some emails and more calls coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from the Honest Weight Food Co-op, located at 100 Watervliet Ave in Albany. Offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty foods, and more, honestweight.coop. Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche, QFCC.com. Smith College Museum of Art, presenting The Eye is a Door, landscape photographs by Ann Whiston Spurn, now on view. Exhibition-related programs and more, smith.edu/artmuseum for details. Third Eye Associates Limited, life planning, transition planning, and wealth management, registered investment advisors with offices in New York City, Washington, D.C., and Red Hook, New York, thirdeyeassociates.com. MKC Kitchen and Bath Center, Troy, offering a range of cabinetry, including showplace wood products, countertops, design services, and showroom, mkckitchens.com. And MPAC, providing the Capital Region with a full schedule of cultural events, including performances, screenings, talks, concerts, and more, mpac.rpi.edu.
one 800 348 2551 is our number. It's Vox Pop, our daily afternoon call-in talk show. And Ward Stone is here after a two-year absence. He has been making his way back health-wise, and nice to have Ward in front of a WAMC microphone again. And you wanted to finish up a question that came early on about feeding raccoons.
John, yeah. I think he was actually putting out food for a stray cat.
Right.
That'll attract all kinds of animals, including the raccoon. Okay. So it's a good idea not to be feeding it in this particular case, and in general, because it will attract the raccoon in there by increase the threat for his little dog.
Agreed. All right, now let's go to, before we get back to the calls, let's go to a couple of emails that came in. This one says, welcome back, Ward. We have missed you dearly. Attached is a picture taken this winter way out in the woods. Hand next to the picture is an adult male of normal size. Can you identify the animal? And that's from Winnie in Toland, Mass. Now, it's a paw print, big one.
It's a big one.
What do you think it is?
Well, there's a human hand there, maybe Winnie's hand, and it's as wide as that.
Yep.
You can see the nails on the end of those toes, and that is a canid. Actually, a mountain lion wouldn't show those toe nails sticking in the snow the way this one is.
Retract?
Right.
So this would be a dog or a wolf?
This is a dog or wolf, and most likely a dog.
A big dog.
A big dog.
However, you made a great point during the break that snow can play tricks. The old pictures of Bigfoot in the snow, the old Bigfoot tracks, were often just people tracks that had been melted and then refrozen.
We've got a lot of big footprints in the snow.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of melting. Even when we have what people think is a tough winter, like this past one, you have your warm days, and you have a lot of snow melting, and the footprint then looks a lot bigger than it really is.
So you think it's probably just a dog?
I think it's a big, big dog.
All right. Thank you, Winnie. We appreciate that email, and you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. All right, Ward, here's another one. This is from Paul. Give us an update on the status of honeybees in New York State, as well as the white sooty nose fungus on the bat population.
I'm very concerned about both, especially with the bees right now. I've been watching for the bees. Right now I'm living in Troy at Diamond Ridge and learning to walk again. But anyway, part of that is I go out and I observe nature. And I've been watching. I haven't seen a bee last year, last summer and fall. And I haven't seen one yet this year. I'm doing some gardening there.
Yeah.
And I'm watching the trees. The crab apples are coming into bloom and so on. Not a single honeybee. They certainly
all in
have
my backyard.
Gotten. They've, huh?
They're all in my backyard.
You got them all there?
Oh, we got bees.
You're lucky.
All kinds of bees.
Well, there's a couple of hives at Five Rivers, but there is this hive collapse, which has occurred all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a real lack of honeybees. And I was thinking back to when I was a kid over in Chatham, New York, and you'd walk up to an apple tree in bloom, crab apple tree in bloom, either one, and you would hear the tree buzzing. There would be so many bees on those blossoms, you could hear the buzzing. Not so anymore. So if you've got a lot of bees in your backyard, that's a good thing.
You know what we had either last year or the year before? We have a crab apple tree in our front yard. All of a sudden, one of the kids came running in and said, bees, that's all. And we looked up at the top of this crab apple tree, looked like it was a beehive, just bees swarming around. And it really wasn't a hive. It was the bees swarming around the queen. I don't even know if there was an actual hive there. It was just so, it was thousands and thousands of bees on the top of that crabapple tree.
So they had been in a strong hive, and they were splitting up, probably.
I don't know what it was.
And a queen took off and had thousands of workers with her.
Yeah.
And they were looking for a spot to make a hive.
Well, we stayed in the house for a couple of hours until they moved on.
So maybe you still got a lot of those bees around. They found a place in a hollow in a tree.
Maybe.
Something of that sort. And so you've got a lot of bees,
so
which is nice.
So there's some hope, perhaps.
There is always hope. We got to maintain hope. But along with that hope, there's got to be a lot of action.
What sort of action to protect the bees?
Well, I think we have to fund the research to find out what the cause is. There's some talk about it being a particular pesticide or a group of pesticides, nicotinamides,
mm-hmm.
neonicotinamides. And if that's that, then we should know that.
Yeah.
That's why it was good when you had somebody like me there at DEC, because we would collect up the bees and then we run tests and see what the pesticide was.
Yeah.
That's got to be done. It's got to be run down. Cornell can do some of the work on them. They do a lot of work on bees, but it's going to be done all over the world. Those bees are economically important, ecologically important.
Yeah.
And they're going to do a lot of research to find out what is going on. But we better get at it.
Ward Stone is our guest. It has been some time since Ward has been in front of these microphones. And Ward is back. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Don in Great Barrington. Don, you're on.
Gentlemen, Dr. Stone, Great Barrington, it's been a long time. These 2 years have been too long. And I hope this is not just a one shot. And you'll be back regularly or frequently. One question that many of us have pondered is when the geese, as you mentioned, seem to mate for life, when one is eliminated, either traffic or whatever, and one is left alone perhaps with the gosling, what happens to that family? What happens to that mate? Does she or he acquire a new mate, please?
Well, I think if the goslings are there, the single goose will try to raise them to the point where they'll go off on their own. They mate for life until death do us part. And when the one
they
goose
don't fool around
starts,
at all?
They fool around then.
Oh,
they
in other words,
another,
they can pick up
another,
a new mate.
They can pick up a new mate.
Great.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thanks, Don.
Well, the reason why I said death do us part is like, you know, you say when you get married.
Sure.
Death do us part.
So they're really monogamous.
They are monogamous.
Is that that's not that common in nature, right?
No, there's even books out on it how smaller birds, warblers, do some fooling around early in the morning, off in the trees and meet up with a member of the opposite sex.
Right. All right. Well, let's just move on. Judy and Troy. Judy, you're on.
Hi. I want to say it took a lot of wishing, but finally you're back, and I'm very glad that you're back.
Thank you very much.
I have never seen such lush green as I am now, as I'm seeing now. And I'm wondering what went into that. What brought this lushness of green all around?
I don't know that I know the answer to that fully, but I've been thinking about that myself. And one of the possibilities is more carbon dioxide. The plants use carbon dioxide and to build up their cells. And release oxygen. So I think that maybe the carbon dioxide is part of it. I'd have to look at the green that you're looking at what plants are they? You're talking about grasses and...
I'm talking about grasses and trees and shrubs and just everything you look at has become green and bright green.
Well, of course, we put out a lot of fertilizers, but I think really probably I've been thinking about that question. It is, I think, the carbon dioxide. And that's not saying that fracking and global warming are good things and producing carbon dioxide with various burning processes, because there's the negative side to it.
Yeah.
But I think that it's probably the CO2 is providing a source for plant growth, and it's helping them green up. The other thing is that it's getting warmer earlier with the global warming. You know, we don't seem to have what we used to have. When I was a kid, you would have winter, and then you had a cold spring, and then you had so you could see a change during spring for getting warmer, and then hot weather.
We had a cold now spring this year, right? It's been a fairly old-style spring. It was chilly yesterday.
It's also chilly. Had some into the 80s.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
Well into the 80s. So it's been kind of good, but there's still some hot points to it.
All right, let's go to Tim in Boston Spa. Tim, you're on with
Ward
Stone.
That's a good question anyway about that grass.
Yeah, two little anecdotes and a question. I just about the greening, I noticed this year there are more little maple trees growing up. I mean, billions of them, than I've never had that many in 20 years. A guy down the road who raises sheep has had a beehive for 30 years, and it eventually rotted and fell over, and the bees moved into a shed that he has, and they're doing very well there. But he's kind of isolated, and these bees are still living.
Okay.
In this day and age, I find remarkable.
I do. I do. I find that, and I find that a good sign. When I was a kid, there were wild bees all over the place.
Right.
In the hollows of trees, you'd find them out when you're doing your wandering around when you're 8, 10 years old. You'd find bees.
Me too.
Not now. But that's a good sign that they're doing good. Now, he may not have the pesticides around. We got to get the answers as to what it is that's causing this downfall.
Right.
I mean, there are mites that are in the respiratory system of the bees.
Yeah.
They're killing them as well.
I've had bees, and I've lost them all.
Yeah, well, there's a number of infectious diseases and that they get. And it could be those, but we've got to do an overall study on bees going down and figure out what it is.
Yeah. On keys.
And if it is the pesticide, we can move to ban the pesticides, stop their use, and that can make the situation at least better. But we got to get the data.
Steve Geige might think differently.
Well, yeah, whoever produces the pesticide will think differently, yes.
Tim, you got another question?
Yeah. Actually, the main question I had was, ticks. I mean, I've been out in the woods for 60 years, and I've never had ticks until the last few years. What's with that? And now they're,
Where do you live?
Up in Boston Spa.
Yeah. Well, Like you, I've been out in the woods going back at least 60 years, in my case a little longer, and I didn't pick up any ticks. I was all over the woods and fields, not one tick.
Yeah.
But, of course, they really weren't around. I noticed that when I became pathologist, which was in 1969, shortly after that, we began to see the ticks, and we also got Lyme disease. Mm. And the ticks came over from Massachusetts, from Old Lyme, Connecticut mm-hmm. area as well. And they invaded in Long Island, and then they came up the Hudson River Valley.
Did the ticks come up or the pathogen?
Both, probably. Mm-hmm. Probably moved the ticks some pretty good distances in some cases by having the nymphs on birds that were migrating and moving about.
Ah.
But it still took some time for them to become established. So Balsan Spa is in Saratoga County.
Correct.
There were a couple of decades before it came on strongly in Upper Hudson River Valley. So you're in that area, and they've come on strongly now, and they're continuing to move around the country. They're even out in California.
Are there any other species of ticks that transmit Lyme disease, or just the deer tick?
Not that I know of.
Thank you.
All Ixodes damnii.
Thanks, Tim. We appreciate the call. The number to call, by the way, is 1-800-348-2551. We are joined by Ward Stone today. Let's go to Carrie in Latham. Carrie.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good.
That's good. I am calling because this year we suddenly have a groundhog that seems to be living between my neighbor's yard and mine, and I'm wondering if I need to worry about that.
I like woodchucks a lot. Groundhogs, woodchucks. When you say worry.
Are they going to eat my foliage and all my plants and all that?
Well, it eats some of your foliage. Just before I had the stroke, I was parked in Del Mar near the Four Corners, which is a very busy area. And I parked in the municipal parking lot and looked over the fence. And there was a mother woodchuck with a couple of young out there in the lawn feeding.
Yeah.
And they are moving into a lot of areas that they didn't used to be in.
Well, how would one protect one's, let's say, garden from a groundhog?
Well, it's pretty hard to protect a small area if you've got some lush vegetation there, lettuce, string beans,
it's not,
things
it's not
of that
a
sort.
Vegetable garden. It's really mostly hostas and just plants.
Okay. Then we won't be too thrilled with the hosta.
No, oh, good.
Hosta
okay.
won't be overly enthusiastic about that.
Okay. Do you think it would make sense to get one of those humane traps and move it someplace else?
Well, you got an opportunity to learn something about the woodchuck and watch it.
Okay.
You could even plant something for the woodchuck if you like plants.
Aren't there
like
regulations
what?
Against moving them, though?
There are laws about that, but people do that. That's been going on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is they shoot them, they trap them, and whack them on the head. And
oh no, I wouldn't
them.
Do anything like that.
That's what I'm saying. They're a very interesting animal.
Okay.
And there's a book.
They don't
I think
carry rabies or anything.
They do carry rabies.
Oh.
Just about everything can get rabies. I think they were about 7th most common animal in New York to come down with rabies because raccoons and the like go in woodchuck holes. They go into barns. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's how they run into the woodchuck. But it's unlikely, and they are awfully neat animals. I've raised them.
Uh-huh.
You've raised groundhogs?
Well, yeah. Oh, they're smart little things.
Really?
Wonderful.
It's cute to watch.
Sitting in a rocking chair.
I was worried about it.
Like you, I've got a lot of kids.
Yeah.
And some of the wildlife that I raised were almost like kids too. I just had the rocking chair and
that's amazing.
Had a bottle in the mouth of the woodchuck.
Wow!
And the woodchuck got to know me very, very well.
Maybe Ward could come over to your house, Carrie, and have a chat with the groundhog. And
what I'm saying is, you might want to plant something for the woodchuck.
Like what?
Well, like lettuce, beans. peas. the things we like the most in general, they like the most.
Yeah, or Carrie, just plant it over in the neighbor's yard.
Right.
That's another one.
From the way it sounded, it's using both the neighbor's yard and her yard and probably some neighbors that she doesn't know about.
It's a smorgasbord.
It's got to have a hole someplace nearby, though.
We got to take a break here.
I don't think it'll bother your hosta.
Oh, that's good.
That's good.
All right, Ward Stone is here, and we're going to hit the home stretch in just a moment here. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Back in a flash.
Support for WAMC comes from Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga, InterimHealthcare.com. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting the exhibition Ogden Pleissner, Watercolors and Oil Paintings, now through June 1st, ArkellMuseum.org. The New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, serving the public for over 30 years, nysba.org/lawyer-referral. Skidmore College Master's Program, part-time graduate study customized according to individual student objectives, available at a distance, beginning July, malsskidmore.edu. Cafe Capriccio, offering dining and catering with Tuscan cuisine in Albany, New York, and Neapolitan cuisine in Saratoga Springs. CafeCapriccio.com for reservations. And Ward's Nursery and Garden Center in Great Barrington for container gardens, tropicals, perennials, patio tomatoes, plus new varieties of supertunias, verbena, and geraniums. Ward'sNursery.com.
Booker T and the MGs here on Vox Pop. Ward Stone is our guest today. So good to have Ward back. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Phone lines are loaded at the moment. Lynn in New Ashford. Lynn, you're up.
Yes, hi. Welcome back, Ward. I've missed you. I have a question about a critter that likes to prowl around in my backyard at night, and I've never seen it, but it makes a blood-curdling noise. It starts low-pitched, and it just keens and drags right out until it's really, really high-pitched. It almost sounds like a firecracker going off or whatever, and I'm just hoping you might be able to help me identify whatever it is.
Well, I can guess at that. I think that's probably a fox.
Really?
Really?
Yep. Some of them can, at times, give a very good high-pitched scream.
What about the low?
And, once in a while it's on more low side, but more high.
I've heard cats in heat sort of make odd noises.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, that's true. But this is not uncommon. I hear that every once in a while, even where I am right now, which is in the city of Troy at Diamond Ridge. We have gray foxes that come in and roam around on the nice lawns that are there.
Yeah.
And, they get in there, and by golly, every now and then you'll hear one of those sounds.
But I mean, Lynn, can you make this sound? Because the way you're saying it, it drags out. It starts low and then goes very, very high.
Yeah, I wish I could, but I'm terrible at things like that.
See, I love stuff like that. If you
try to record it, and we'll listen to it.
Yeah, I tried to do that, but it just starts low and doesn't. It just sounds like a firecracker going off without the explosion at the end.
Wow.
It's really got me puzzled. Just another thought. I have a problem with the groundhogs, big problem with the groundhogs. They don't bother much with anything come summertime, but in the winter and early spring, they like to dine on everything I've got. So I buy chicken wire, and in the fall, before it gets cold, I just put chicken wire around any plants that I want to make sure I still have.
Yeah. Don't they have, what are they eating?
Azaleas, roses, young lilac bushes, any tender shoots off of any medium-sized bushes I have, they'll nip all those off.
Now, would you have to put, to guard against a groundhog, would you have to put that chicken wire down a few inches into the ground?
I haven't, but I do anchor it with tent stakes.
Well, that sounds good. You're also protecting the plants from other things too, like cottontails and probably white-tailed deer.
Yeah, well, I thought about the other animals too, but I've watched these little critters do it, and they upset me a lot.
Oh boy, I'm sorry, Lynn. Well, thank you for calling.
Thanks for your help.
Interesting about eating the lilacs. Very few things will eat much lilac.
Really? Let's go over to Laura in Poughkeepsie. Laura, you're on with Ward Stone.
Hi. Very good to hear Ward back on the air. I was just wondering if squirrels can get rabies. I had heard that they cannot.
They can.
Squirrels can
get
rabies.
I've diagnosed it in squirrels, yes.
Are you saying C-A-N?
They can.
C-A-N,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
They usually don't. Probably one of the reasons is that when they're bitten by a rabid animal, they don't survive the bite.
Got it.
They're either killed by the trauma or shortly thereafter by the a massive infection.
Okay.
But anyway, it is rare to see rabies in something like a gray squirrel or a cottontail rabbit or a chipmunk. But they can. And I've definitely had gray squirrels that I've diagnosed with it. But they were few and far between.
Well, again, so good to hear you. Glad to have you back.
Laura, thank you.
Glad to be back. Thank you very much.
So, Ward, you had mentioned earlier in the show that there was a hierarchy of critters that are more likely to get rabies. What's at the top of that list?
Raccoon, right now.
And what's number two?
Number two, it's got to be with the gray fox and the red fox.
What about domesticated animals?
Not the red. Domestic animals, well, the cat gets it more than the dog because there's a lot more cats running around that haven't been vaccinated.
Yeah, okay.
But that's why it's important. Make sure you immunize your cats and dogs and your horses.
Yeah.
You can immunize your cows.
Makes sense.
And what happens is people don't read about rabies much in the newspapers for a while or see it on TV or hear about it on WAMC. And they don't keep up on their immunizations, and boom, they've got rabies.
Theoretically, if everything was vaccinated, could it be eradicated as as polio was or was close to being eradicated?
Well, if you say everything, you're talking about the gray fox and the red fox, and of course the raccoon by the millions.
Yeah, but it's not practically possible, but it could.
With economics, it could be, yes.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Tim in Gilderland. Tim, you're on.
Good, thank you. My question is, there's simply not enough predators for deer. I mean, when people go out to the country and they see the deer and they're very pretty, they don't realize what a pest they are. And there are very few coyotes here, and there are almost no wolves.
Yeah. Where are you located?
I owned a house in Columbia County, in a rural part of Columbia County.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And I would see a coyote every now and then, but the deer were just so overpopulated. And I think it's a problem all over the Northeast, not just in New York.
Well, I think global warming has been an advantage for the deer. It used to be that we had a lot of deer dying off from starvation. And, of course, before that, there were packs of wolves. There were some mountain lions. There was more predation. And every time people saw deer in some parts of the country, including a lot of parts of rural Columbia County, where I come from, they looked at them as dinner.
I was in Ghent.
Oh, I know Ghent very well.
It's beautiful.
Beautiful country. But you're right, there are an awful lot of deer. And the warm winters, we used to have bad winters where we would get a die off of fawns and older deer. But that hasn't been occurring with any regularity since about 1970.
So Tim's point, though, let's see if you agree, that there aren't enough predators now, the coyotes, the wolves. If that, in fact, is to be taken as Tim says it, then what is the answer? More hunting?
Well, that's what they've done, more hunting. And they kill hundreds of thousands of deer are taken in the Northeast each year, better than 100,000 in New York every year.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
I had a friend of mine who taught high school in a rural county in Wisconsin, and the kids, the high school kids, would get like a week off in the fall for deer hunting, and they would take thousands, if not tens of thousands of deer. And that seems like an exaggeration, but it was in the thousands. And there's no equivalent program like that here. And I love deer. They're beautiful. Everybody thinks that. The thing is, they're voracious consumers of your shrubbery.
Mm. All right.
And I don't know what else to do about it, but there are no predators for them.
Well, that's the thing. Is it practical to say, well, gee, we need more wolves, we need more mountain lions? I mean, we could say
They're going to eat your dog.
That's right.
And they're not going to handle the deer population that we have.
Yeah.
So the hunting is one good way to limit it. And maybe we take more deer. But the deer do other things, too, besides they also eat a lot of those wildflowers. Mm. That we like to see this time of year, trillium and the like. And in areas where there's overpopulations of white-tailed deer, there also are shortages of certain kinds of wildflowers.
Mm. All right, let's try to get as many calls in here as we can at 1-800-348-2551. Patricia in Woodstock. Patricia, you're on with Ward Stone.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. My question is, we have a wren house in our yard, and for the last few years we've been having several batches of babies being born, and yesterday when I got home, the eggs had been knocked out of the nest, and there was a kind of raggedy gray-black feather there where the eggs landed, and I was wondering if there's a predator that would be going in the house, would be able to get in there and get those eggs.
Is the entrance to that nest big enough for an English sparrow to enter? A house sparrow?
It said it was small enough safe for the wrens, because it was small when I bought the wren house.
Well, if it's a little bit bigger size, doesn't take very big. The bluebird house is built so that the sparrows, the starlings, can't get in if it's properly built. But that was a wren house, and they take a very small hole. So there may be a way that it sounds like the work of an English sparrow or a house sparrow. And they have a tendency to throw eggs out of a nest if they can, or break them or build a nest on top. And then, since they're nesting at this time, I suspect that it is something like that, it is the house sparrow.
So is there anything I can do to prevent it from happening again? Because the wren is back, and she seems to be going back into the house.
Yeah, they're a pretty feisty little bird, too. She may have, they may have done battle with the sparrow and been able to hold their own. I'd certainly watch and see what's going on there. And if that doesn't work out, put a small... Get a nest with a smaller hole for the wren.
Okay. Go ahead, Patricia. You want one more?
Yeah, we have a deer that comes through our yard regularly the last few years, and lately she's been looking very sickly, like she's drooling, and she's very thin, and she has some patches of fur missing. Would you have any idea what could be causing that?
Well, probably about 25 years ago, I heard... a young man call and tell me that story. The young man was a technician in DEC, and he thought he was sick and was coming to an area where food was being put out for deer. So we decided that the best thing was to destroy the deer, and because it was sick and it was going to spread it to the other deer. Well, when I examined the deer, and I had developed this method of sectioning their teeth and telling how old they were. And the deer turned out to be about 23 years of age.
Oh. That's a good run.
Very good run. And pregnant.
Wow.
So I had a deer killed. Now, it was drooling. It's almost the same story. Mm. So it may be an old doe whose teeth are very worn down. Front teeth are worn down.
Oh, I see where you're going with that, yeah.
And is drooling because of that. Of course, maybe drooling for some other reason. But I'd watch it, and I'd try to look at the teeth and try to look. And in the case of the old deer that I had killed, I had had it killed, it turned out that many of the other deer that were with her were her young.
Yeah.
From different years.
Oh, boy.
So they were showing her considerable deference, even though she was small, raggedy-looking, and drooling. So I'm wondering if you don't have an old doe.
Yeah, that sounds like it could be right.
So take a hard look at her.
Yeah.
Well, that's a very interesting call. Patricia, thank you very much.
Thanks, Patricia.
Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Tell you what, let's get one or two more in here with Ward Stone. We'll never get to everybody, and I guess, Ward, we'll have to have you back at some point because the lines are loaded here, all right?
Oh, that's great.
All right, let's go to Carla in Sunderland, Mass. Carla, you're on.
Hi. I have a zoo background from Houston, and one of the things that used to get our ducklings and goslings were snapping turtles.
Yep.
And I'm sure that that's what takes a lot of snapping turtles. Our snapping turtles were they were huge. From head to tail, they were 3.5 feet. We had to get them out of there and put them in with the alligators.
Well, they certainly, as you indicate, they do eat goslings, and even a fairly good size. I've seen them take a 4 or 5 pounder Canada Goose gosling. I remember once I worked at Five Rivers for 40 some odd years near there in the lab, and we got a call, and a snapping turtle had a hold of a Canada Goose just about full size.
Wow.
Was hanging on to that leg and just biting it and breaking the leg, and they will eat ducks and they will eat geese. That's
and they will take down dogs in the water.
They'll what?
They will take down dogs in the water. They'll grab their foot and just take them under.
Really?
Yeah.
Yikes. Small enough they might. I've never known one to do that, but it certainly is in the possibilities.
Yeah. All right, Carla, thank you for frightening me. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Have a great day. And I guess we'll have to leave it there, Ward, but what a great time. I really appreciate you being here today. And, you know, good. You're looking good. Let's keep the rehab going, and let's get you back here, all right?
Well, I intend to make a 100% recovery.
Very nice.
That's probably not going to make 100%, but close to it.
Well, I tell you, this
was
fun.
So this is a step in that direction.
A lot of fun to have you here. And don't worry, everybody. All of you, all the lines are loaded now, and I'm sorry we'll have to leave it there. Listen, Ward will come back. We'll do this again, and we appreciate you calling in. Sorry if you didn't make it through. By the way, while I have a second here, the lockbox. Now, the fund drive starts June 2nd, our on-air fund drive. Alan will kick it off at 6 a.m. on June 2nd. We have the lockbox on the website. You go to wamc.org, and you'll see a picture of a lockbox with how much we've raised, which I think is about $210,000. When we started this, there was a challenge. It said, you get to $325,000 before the fund drive. I, an anonymous person who we know the name of, but we call Mr. Big, will give an extra $25,000. So if that happens, if we make $325,000 by the beginning of the fund drive on June 2nd, we get an extra $25,000. That puts us at $350,000 before the drive begins. And the drive will be over much, much quicker. So if you like what you hear on WAMC and you want to keep hearing it, go to WAMC.org, feed the lockbox, as we say, and we'll have a shorter fund drive. We'll be back with more programming, and we'll all be very grateful. You can get some stuff, too. Not really what it's about, but there's a lot of cool stuff. Support for WAMC comes from Mass Mocha. North Adams, celebrating 15 years with Red Barat, DJ Reka, Art Food and More on May 24th, Iron and Wine on June 22nd, Beck on June 24th, massmocha.org. Mount St. Mary College in Newburgh, offering traditional and adult student bachelor's degree programs in accounting and business and the MBA in a streamlined format, msmc.edu. Equimotion, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, working to improve communications and performance between horses and their riders. Spring tune-up equine massage clinics, throughout the region, equimotionedu.com. And Harrington's Lumber, Millwork, and Building Supplies, offering Marvin windows and doors handcrafted in America, energy efficient and available with customization options. We share your passion, Harrington's.com. Thanks again to Ward Stone. Thanks again to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Colleen O'Connell answered your calls. Jessica Blaustein Marshall, who is our producer. I'm Ray Graff. We'll see you tomorrow for the Science Forum.